You resented him. How easy he found life. He offered to pay for a nanny, but, well, you said that was typical of him, to throw money at the problem. You had a point, but perhaps you weren't being terribly fair. Perhaps not, I thought. It struck me that back then we must have had money. More money than we had after I lost my memory. More money than I guess we have now. What a drain on our resources my illness must have been. I tried to picture myself arguing with Ben, looking after a baby, trying to write. I imagined bottles of milk, or Adam at my breast, dirty nappies, mornings in which getting both myself and my baby fed were the only ambitions I could reasonably have, and afternoons in which I was so exhausted the only thing I craved was sleep, sleep that was still hours away, and the thought of trying to write was pushed far from my mind. I could see it all, and feel the slow, burning resentment. But that's all they were. Imaginings. I remembered nothing. Claire's story felt like it had nothing to do with me at all. So I had an affair. She looked up. I was free. I was doing my painting then. I said I'd look after Adam 2 afternoons a week, so you could write. I insisted. She took my hand in hers. It was my fault, Chrissy. I even suggested you go to a cafe. A cafe? I said. I thought it would be a good idea if you got out of the house, gave yourself space, a few hours a week away from everything. After a few weeks, you seemed to get better. You were happier in yourself. You said your work was going well. You started going to the cafe almost every day, taking Adam when I couldn't look after him. But then I noticed that you were dressing differently, too. The classic thing, though I didn't realize what it was at the time. I thought it was just because you were feeling better, more confident. But then Ben called me one evening. He'd been drinking, I think. He said you were arguing more than ever, and he didn't know what to do. You were off sex, too. I told him it was probably just because of the baby, that he was probably worrying unnecessarily, but I interrupted. I was seeing someone. I asked you. You denied it at first, but then I told you I wasn't stupid, and neither was Ben. We had an argument, but after a while, you told me the truth. The truth. Not glamorous. Not exciting. Just the bald facts. I had turned into a living cliché, taking to fucking someone I'd met in a cafe, while my best friend was babysitting my child, and my husband was earning the money to pay for the clothes and underwear I was wearing for someone other than him. I pictured the furtive phone calls, the aborted arrangements when something unexpected came up, and on the days we could get together, the sordid, pathetic afternoons, spent in bed with a man who had temporarily seemed better, more exciting, attractive, a better lover, richer than my husband. Was this the man I had been waiting for in that hotel room? The man who would eventually attack me, leave me with no past and no future? I closed my eyes, a flash of memory, hands gripping my hair, around my throat, my head underwater, gasping, crying. I remember what I was thinking. I want to see my son. One last time. I want to see my husband. I should never have done this to him. I should never have betrayed him with this man. I will never be able to tell him I am sorry. Never. I opened my eyes. Claire was squeezing my hand. Are you all right? She said. Tell me, I said. I don't know whether, please, I said, tell me. Who was it? She sighed. You said you met someone else who went to the cafe regularly. He was nice, you said. Attractive. You'd tried, but you hadn't been able to stop yourself. What was his name? I said, who was he? I don't know. You must, I said. His name, at least. Who did this to me? She looked into my eyes. Chrissy, she said, her voice calm. You never even told me his name. You just said you'd met him in a coffee shop. I suppose you didn't want me to know any details. Any more than I had to, at least. I felt another sliver of hope slip away, washed downstream in the river. I would never know who did this to me. What happened? I told you that I thought you were being silly. There was Adam to think about, as well as Ben. I thought you ought to call it off. Stop seeing him. But I wouldn't listen. No, she said, not at first. We fought. I told you that you were putting me in an impossible situation. Ben was my friend, too. You were asking me to lie to him. What happened? How long did it go on for? She was silent, then said, I don't know. One day, it must have been only a few weeks, you announced that it was all over. You told this man that it wasn't working. That you'd made a mistake. You said you were sorry you'd been foolish. Crazy. I was lying? I don't know, I don't think so. You and I didn't lie to each other. We just didn't. She blew across the top of her coffee. A few weeks later, you were found in Brighton, she said. I have no idea what happened in that time. Perhaps it was those words, I have no idea what happened in that time, that set it off. The realization that I may never know how I came to be attacked. But a sound suddenly escaped me. I tried to clamp it down but failed. Something between a gasp and a howl. It was the cry of an animal in pain. Toby looked up from his coloring book. Everyone in the cafe turned to stare at me, at the mad woman with no memory. Claire grabbed my arm. Chrissy, she said, what's wrong? I was sobbing now, my body heaving, gasping for breath, crying for all the years I had lost, and for all those that I would continue to lose between now and the day I died. Crying because, however hard it had been for her to tell me about the affair, and my marriage, and my son, she would have to do it all again tomorrow. Crying mostly, though, because I had brought all this on myself. I'm sorry, I said. I'm sorry. Claire stood up and came round the table. She crouched beside me, her arm around my shoulder, and I rested my head against hers. There, there, she said as I sobbed. It's all right, Chrissy, darling. I'm here now. I'm here. We left the cafe. As if unwilling to be outdone, Toby had become boisterously noisy after my own outburst. He threw his colouring book on the floor, along with a plastic cup of juice. Claire cleaned it up and then said, I need to get some air. Shall we? Now we sat on one of the benches that overlooked the park. Our knees were angled towards each other, and Claire held my hands in hers, stroking them as if they were cold. I began. Did I have lots of affairs? She shook her head. No, none. We had fun at university, you know, but no more than most. And once you met Ben, that stopped. You were always faithful to him. I wondered what had been so special about the man in the cafe. Claire had said that I told her he was nice, attractive. Was that all it was? Was I really so shallow? My husband was both of those things, I thought. If only I'd been content with what I had. Ben knew I was having an affair? Not at first, no. Not until you were found. It was a dreadful shock for him. For all of us. At first it looked as though you might not even live. Later, Ben asked me if I knew why you'd been in Brighton. I told him. I had to. I'd already told the police all I knew. I had no choice but to tell Ben. Guilt punctured me once more as I thought of my husband, of the father of my son, trying to work out why his dying wife had turned up miles away from home. How could I do this to him? He forgave you, though, said Claire. He never held it against you, ever. All he cared about was that you lived, and that you got better. He would have given everything for that. Everything. Nothing else mattered. I felt a surge of love for my husband. Real. Unforced. Despite everything, he had taken me in. Looked after me. Will you talk to him? I said. She smiled. Of course. But about what? He's not telling me the truth, I said. Or not always, anyway. He's trying to protect me. He tells me what he thinks I can cope with, what he thinks I want to hear. Ben wouldn't do that, she said. He loves you. He always has. Well, he is, I said. He doesn't know I know. He doesn't know I'm writing things down. He doesn't tell me about Adam, other than when I remember him and ask. He doesn't tell me he left me. He tells me you live on the other side of the world. He doesn't think I can cope. He's given up on me, Claire. Whatever he used to be like, he's given up on me. He doesn't want me to see a doctor because he doesn't think I will ever get any better. But I've been seeing one, Claire. A Dr. Nash. In secret. I can't even tell Ben. Claire's face fell. She looked disappointed. In me, I suppose. That's not good, she said. You ought to tell him. He loves you. He trusts you. I can't. He only admitted he was still in touch with you the other day. Until then, he'd been saying he hadn't spoken to you in years. Her expression of disapproval changed. For the first time, I could see that she was surprised. Chrissy! It's true, I said. I know he loves me, but I need him to be honest with me about everything. I don't know my own past, and only he can help me. I need him to help me. Then you should just talk to him. Trust him. But how can I? I said. With all the things he's lied to me about, how can I? She squeezed my hands in hers. Chrissy, Ben loves you. You know he does. He loves you more than life itself. He always has. But, I began, but she interrupted. You have to trust him. Believe me. You can sort everything out, but you have to tell him the truth. Tell him about Dr. Nash. Tell him what you've been writing. It's the only way. Somewhere, deep down, I knew she was right, but still I could not convince myself I should tell Ben about my journal. But he might want to read what I've written. Her eyes narrowed. There's nothing in there you wouldn't want him to see, is there? I didn't reply. Is there? Chrissy? I looked away. We didn't speak. And then she opened her bag. Chrissy, she said, I'm going to give you something. Ben gave it to me when he decided he needed to leave you. She took out an envelope and handed it to me. It was creased but sealed. He told me it explained everything. I stared at it. My name was written on the front in capitals. He asked me to give it to you, if I ever thought you were well enough to read it. I looked up at her, feeling every emotion at once. Excitement and fear. I think it's time you read it, she said. I took it from her and put it in my bag. Though I didn't know why, I didn't want to read it there in front of Claire. Perhaps I was worried that she would be able to read its contents reflected in my face, and they would no longer be mine to own. Thank you, I said. She did not smile. Chrissy, she said. She looked down at her hands. There's a reason Ben tells you I moved away. I felt my world begin to change, though in what way I was not yet certain. I have to tell you something about why we lost touch. I knew then, without her saying anything, I knew the missing piece of the puzzle, the reason Ben had gone, the reason my best friend had disappeared from my life and my husband had lied about why this had happened. I had been right. All along. I had been right. It's true, I said. Oh God, it's true. You're seeing Ben. You're fucking my husband. She looked up, horrified. No, she said, no! A certainty overtook me. I wanted to shout, liar! But I did not. I was about to ask her again what she wanted to tell me when she wiped something from her eye. A tear. I don't know. Not now, she whispered, then looked back to the hands in her lap. But we were once. Of all the emotions I might have expected to feel, relief wasn't one of them. But it was true. I felt relieved. Because she was being honest? Because now I had an explanation for everything, one that I could believe? I'm not sure. But the anger that I may have felt was not there. Neither was the pain. Perhaps I was happy to feel a tiny spark of jealousy, concrete proof that I loved my husband. Perhaps I was just relieved that Ben had an infidelity to go with my own, that we were equal now, quits. "Tell me," I whispered. She did not look up. "We were always close," she said softly. "The three of us, I mean. You, me, Ben. But there had never been anything between me and him. You must believe that. Never." I told her to go on. "After your accident, I tried to help out in whatever way I could. You can imagine how terribly difficult it was for Ben, just on a practical level, if nothing else, having to look after Adam. I did what I could. We spent a lot of time together, but we didn't sleep together. Not then, I swear, Chrissy." "So when?" I said. "When did it happen?" "Just before you were moved to Waring House," she said. "You were at your worst. Adam was being difficult. Things were tough." She looked away. "Ben was drinking. Not too much, but enough. He wasn't coping. One night we got back from visiting you. I put Adam to bed. Ben was in the living room crying. 'I can't do it,' he kept saying. 'I can't keep doing this. I love her, but it's killing me.' The wind gusted up the hill, cold, biting. I pulled my coat around my body. I sat next to him, and I could see it all. The hand on the shoulder, then the hug, the mouths that find each other through the tears, the moment when guilt and the certainty that things must go no further gives way to lust and the certainty that they cannot stop. And then what? The fucking. On the sofa. The floor. I do not want to know. And?" "I'm sorry," she said. "I never wanted it to happen, but it did, and I felt so bad. So bad. We both did." "How long?" "What?" "How long did it go on for?" She hesitated, then said, "I don't know. Not long. A few weeks. We only had sex a few times. It didn't feel right. We both felt so bad afterwards." "What happened?" I said. "Who ended it?" She shrugged, then whispered, "Both of us. We talked. It couldn't go on. I decided I owed it to you, and Ben, to stay away from then on. It was guilt, I suppose." An awful thought occurred to me. "Is that when he decided to leave me?" "Chrissy, no," she said quickly. "Don't think that. He felt awful too. But he didn't leave you because of me." "No," I thought, "perhaps not directly. But you might have reminded him of just how much he was missing." I looked at her. I still didn't feel angry. I couldn't. Perhaps if she had told me that they were still sleeping together, I might have felt differently. What she had told me felt as though it belonged to another time. Prehistory. I found it hard to believe it had anything to do with me at all. Claire looked up. "At first I was in touch with Adam, but then Ben must have told him what had happened. Adam said he didn't want to see me again. He told me to stay away from him, and from you too. But I couldn't, Chrissy. I just couldn't. Ben had given me the letter, asked me to keep an eye on you. So I carried on visiting, at Waring House. Every few weeks at first, then every couple of months. But it upset you. It upset you terribly. I know I was being selfish, but I couldn't just leave you there, on your own. I carried on coming, just to check you were all right." "And you told Ben how I was?" "No, we weren't in touch." "Is that why you haven't been visiting me lately? At home? Because you don't want to see Ben?" "No. A few months ago I visited Waring House and they told me you'd left. You gone back to live with Ben? I knew Ben had moved. I asked them to give me your address, but they wouldn't. They said it would be a breach of confidentiality. They said they would give you my number and that if I wanted to write to you, they would pass the letters on. So you wrote? I addressed the letter to Ben. I told him I was sorry, that I regretted what had happened. I begged him to let me see you. But he told you you couldn't. No. You wrote back, Chrissy. You said you were feeling much better. You said you were happy with Ben. She looked away, across the park. You said you didn't want to see me. That your memory would sometimes come back, and when it did, you knew I had betrayed you. She wiped a tear from her eye. You told me not to come anywhere near you ever again. That it was better that you forgot me forever, and that I forgot you. I felt myself go cold. I tried to imagine the anger I must have felt to write a letter like that, but at the same time realized maybe I hadn't felt angry at all. To me, Claire would hardly have existed. Any friendship between us forgotten. I'm sorry, I said. I couldn't imagine being able to remember her betrayal. Ben must have helped me write the letter. She smiled. No, don't apologize. You're right. But I didn't stop hoping you'd change your mind. I wanted to see you. I wanted to tell you the truth to your face. I said nothing. I'm so sorry, she said then. Can you ever forgive me? I took her hand. How could I be angry with her? Or with Ben? My condition has placed an impossible burden on us all. Yes, I said. Yes, I forgive you. We left soon after. At the bottom of the slope she turned to face me. Will I see you? I took her hand. How could I be angry with her? Or with Ben? My condition has placed an impossible burden on us all. Yes, I said. Yes, I forgive you. We left soon after. At the bottom of the slope she turned to face me. Will I see you again? She said. I smiled. I hope so. She looked relieved. I've missed you, Chrissy. You've no idea. It was true. I did have no idea. But with her, and this journal, there was a chance I could rebuild a life worth living. I thought of the letter in my bag, a message from the past. The final piece of the puzzle. The answers I need. I'll see you soon, she said. Early next week, okay? Okay, I said. She hugged me, and my voice was lost in the curls of her hair. She felt like my only friend, the only person I could rely on, along with Ben, my sister. I squeezed her hard. Thank you for telling me the truth, I said. Thank you. For everything. I love you. When we parted and looked at each other, both of us were crying. At home, I sat down to read Ben's letter. I felt nervous. Would it tell me what I needed to know? Will I finally understand why Ben left me? But at the same time, excited. I felt sure it would. Felt certain that with it, with Ben and Claire, I will have everything I need. Darling Christine, this is the hardest thing I have ever had to do. Already I've kicked off with a cliché, but you know I'm not a writer. That was always you. So I'm sorry. But I'll do my best. By the time you read this, you'll know, but I've decided I have to leave you. I can't bear to write it, or even to think it, but I have to. I've tried so hard to find another way, but I can't. Believe me. You have to understand that I love you. I always have. I always will. I don't care what has happened or why. This isn't about revenge or anything like that. I haven't met anybody else. When you were in that coma, I realized just how much a part of me you are. I felt like I was dying every time I looked at you. I realized I didn't care what you were doing that night in Brighton or who you were seeing. I just wanted you to come back to me. And then you did. and I was so happy. You will never know how happy I was. The day they told me you were out of danger, that you wouldn't die, that you weren't going to leave me, or us. Adam was just little, but I think he understood. When we realized you had no memory of what had happened, I thought it was a good thing. Can you believe that? I feel ashamed now, but I thought it was for the best. But then we realized that you were forgetting other things too, gradually, over time. At first it was the names of the people in the beds next to you, the doctors and nurses treating you, but you got worse. You forgot why you were in the hospital, why you weren't allowed to come home with me. You convinced yourself that the doctors were experimenting on you. When I took you home for a weekend, you didn't recognize our street, our house. Your cousin came to see you and you had no idea who she was. We took you back to the hospital and you had no idea where you were going. I think that's when things started to get difficult. You loved Adam so much. It shone out of your eyes when we arrived. And he would run over to you and into your arms, and you would pick him up and know who he was straight away. But then, I'm sorry, Chris, but I have to tell you this. You started to believe that Adam had been away from you when he was a baby. Every time you saw him, you thought that it was the first time since he was a few months old. I would ask him to tell you when he last saw you, and he would say, "Yesterday, Mummy," or "Last week." But you didn't believe him. "What have you been telling him?" you'd say. "It's a lie." You started accusing me of keeping you locked there. You thought another woman was raising Adam as her own while you were in the hospital. One day I arrived and you didn't recognize me. You became hysterical. You grabbed Adam when I wasn't looking and ran to the door to rescue him, I suppose, but he started screaming. He didn't understand why you'd do that. I took him home and tried to explain, but he didn't understand. He started being really frightened of you. It got worse. One day I called the hospital. I asked them what you were like when I wasn't there, when Adam wasn't there. "Describe her right now," I said. They said you were calm, happy. You were sitting in the chair next to your bed. "What's she doing?" I said. They said you were talking to one of the other patients, a friend of yours. Sometimes you played cards together. "Played cards," I said. I couldn't believe it. They said you were good at cards. They had to explain the rules to you every day, but then you could beat just about anybody. "Is she happy?" I said. "Yes," they said. "Yes, she's always happy." "Does she remember me?" I said. "Adam." "Not unless you're here," they said. I think I knew then that one day I would have to leave you. I found you a place where you can live for as long as you need to. Somewhere you can be happy. Because you will be happy, without me, without Adam. You won't know us, and so you won't miss us. I love you so much, Chrissy. You must understand that. I love you more than I love anything. But I have to give our son a life he deserves. Soon he will be old enough to understand what's going on. I will not lie to him, Chris. I will explain the choice I have made. I will tell him that although he may want to see you very much, it would be enormously upsetting for him to do so. Maybe he will hate me, blame me. I hope not. But I want him to be happy. And I want you to be happy too. Even if you can only find that happiness without me. You've been in Waringhouse for a while now. You don't panic anymore. You have a sense of routine. That's good. And so it's time for me to go. I'm going to give this letter to Claire. I'll ask her to keep it for me, and to show it to you when you're well enough to read it, and to understand it. I can't keep it myself. I'll just brood over it. And won't be able to resist giving it to you next week, or next month, or even next year. Too soon. I cannot pretend I don't hope that one day we can be together again, when you are recovered, the three of us, a family. I have to believe that might happen. I have to, or else I will die from grief. I am not abandoning you, Chris. I will never abandon you. I love you too much. Believe me, this is the right thing, the only thing for me to do. Don't hate me. I love you. Ben. Kiss. I read it again now, unfold the paper. It feels crisp, as though it might have been written yesterday. But the envelope into which I slip it is soft, its edges frayed, with a sweet smell clinging to it like perfume. Has Claire carried it with her, tucked in a corner of her bag? Or, more likely, has she stored it in a drawer at home, out of sight, but never quite forgotten? For years it waited for the right time to be read. Years that I spent not knowing who my husband was. Not even knowing who I was. Years in which I could never have bridged the gap between us, because it was a gap I had never known existed. I slip the envelope between the pages of my journal. I am crying as I write this, but I don't feel unhappy. I understand everything. Why he left me. Why he has been lying to me. Because he has been lying to me. He has not told me about the novel I wrote so that I will not be devastated by the fact that I will never write another. He has been telling me my best friend moved away to protect me from the fact that the two of them betrayed me. Because he didn't trust me to love them both far too much to not forgive them. He has been telling me that I was hit by a car, that this was an accident, so that I don't have to deal with the fact that I was attacked, and what happened to me was the result of a deliberate act of ferocious hatred. He has been telling me that we never had children, not only to protect me from the knowledge that my only son is dead, but to protect me too from having to deal with the grief of his death every single day of my life. And he has not told me that after years of trying to find a way for our family to be together, he had to face the fact that we couldn't be, and take our son and leave in order to find happiness. He must have thought that our separation would be forever when he wrote that letter. But he must also have hoped that it would not, or else why write it? What was he thinking as he sat there in his home, our home, as it must once have been, and took out his pen and began to try to explain to someone who he could never expect to understand why he felt he had no option but to leave her? I am no writer, he said. And yet his words are beautiful to me, profound. They read as if he is talking about someone else, and yet, somewhere inside me, under the skin and bones, the tissue and blood, I know that he is not. He is talking about, and to, me, Christine Lucas, his broken wife. But it has not been forever. What he hoped for has happened. Somehow my condition has improved, or else he found separation from me even harder than he imagined, and he came back for me. Everything seems different now. The room I am in looks no more familiar to me than it did this morning when I woke up and stumbled into it, trying to find the kitchen, desperate for a drink of water, desperate to piece together what happened last night. And yet it no longer seems shot through with pain and sadness. It no longer seems emblematic of a life I cannot consider living. The ticking of the clock at my shoulder is no longer just marking time. It speaks to me. Relax, it says. Relax, and take what comes. I have been wrong. I have made a mistake. Again and again and again I have made it. Who knows how many times? My husband is my protector, yes, but also my lover. And now I realize that I love him. I have always loved him. And if I have to learn to love him again every day, then so be it. That is what I will do. Ben will be home soon. Already I can feel him approach. And when he arrives back, I will tell him everything. I will tell him that I have met Claire, and Dr. Nash, and even Dr. Paxton, and that I have read his letter. I will tell him that I understand why he did what he did back then, why he left me, and that I forgive him. I will tell him that I know about the attack, but that I no longer need to know what happened, no longer care who did this to me. And I will tell him that I know about Adam. I know what happened to him. And though the thought of facing it every day makes me cold with terror, that is what I must do. The memory of our son must be allowed to exist in this house, and in my heart, too, no matter how much pain that causes. And I will tell him about this journal, that finally I'm able to give myself a narrative, a life, and I will show it to him, if he asks to see it. And then I can continue to use it to tell my story, my autobiography, to create myself from nothing. No more secrets, I will say to my husband. None. I love you, Ben, and I always will. We have wronged each other, but please forgive me. I am sorry that I left you all those years ago to be with somebody else, and I am sorry that we can never know who it was I went to see in that hotel room, or what I found there. But please know that I am determined to make this up to you now. And then, when there is nothing else between us but love, we can begin to find a way to truly be together. I have called Dr. Nash. I want to see you one more time, I said. I want you to read my journal. I think he was surprised, but he agreed. When? He said. Next week, I said. Come for it next week. He said he would collect it on Tuesday. Part 3. Today. I turn the page, but there is no more. The story ends there. I have been reading for hours. I'm shaking. Can barely breathe. I feel that I have not only lived an entire life in the last few hours, but I have changed. I'm not the same person who met Dr. Nash this morning, who sat down to read the journal. I have a past now, a sense of myself. I know what I have and what I have lost. I realize I'm crying. I close the journal. I force myself to calm down, and the present begins to reassert itself. The darkening room in which I sit, the drilling I can still hear in the street outside, the empty coffee cup at my feet. I look at the clock next to me and there is a jolt of shock. Only now do I realize that it is the same clock as the one in the journal that I've been reading, that I'm in the same living room, am the same person. Only now do I fully understand that the story I have been reading is mine. I take my journal and mug into the kitchen. There, on the wall, is the same wipe-clean board I had seen this morning, the same list of suggestions in neat capitals, the same note that I had added myself. Pack bag for tonight. I look at it. Something about it troubles me, but I can't work out why. I think of Ben. How difficult life must have been for him. Never knowing with whom he would wake. Never being certain how much I would remember, how much love I would be able to give him. But now I understand. Now I know enough for us to both live again. I wonder if I ever had the conversation with him that I had been planning. I must have. So certain was I that it was the right thing to do. But I have not written about it. I have written nothing for a week, in fact. Perhaps I gave my journal to Dr. Nash before I had the opportunity. Perhaps I felt there was no need to write in my book, now I had shared it with Ben. I turn back to the front of the journal. There it is, in the same blue ink. Those three words, scratched onto the page beneath my name. Don't trust Ben. I take a pen and cross them out. Back in the living room I see the scrapbook on the table. Still there are no photographs of Adam. Still he didn't mention him to me this morning. Still he hasn't shown me what is in the metal box. I think of my novel, For the Morning Birds, and then look at the journal I'm holding, A thought comes, unbidden. What if I made it all up? I stand up. I need evidence. I need a link between what I have read and what I am living. A sign that the past I have been reading about is not one I have invented. I put the journal in my bag and go out of the living room. The coat stand is there, at the bottom of the stairs, next to a pair of slippers. If I go upstairs, will I find the office? The filing cabinet? Will I find the grey metal box in the bottom drawer, hidden underneath the towel? Will the key be in the bottom drawer by the bed? And if it is, will I find my son? I have to know. I take the stairs two at a time. The office is smaller than I imagined and even tidier than I expected. But the cabinet is there, gunmetal grey. In the bottom drawer is a towel, and beneath it a box. I grip it, preparing to lift it out. I feel stupid, convinced it will be either locked or empty. It is neither. In it I find my novel. Not the copy Dr. Nash had given me. There was no coffee ring on the front, and the pages of this look new. It must be one Ben has been keeping all along, waiting for the day when I know enough to own it again. I wonder where my copy is, the one that Dr. Nash gave to me. I take the novel out, and underneath it is a single photograph. Me and Ben, smiling at the camera, though we both look sad. It looks recent. My face is the one I recognize from the mirror, and Ben looks as he did when he left this morning. There is a house in the background, a gravel driveway, pots of bright red geraniums. On the back someone has written, Waring House. It must have been taken on the day he collected me, to bring me back here. That's it, though. There are no other photographs. None of Adam. Not even the ones I have found here before and described in my journal. There is an explanation, I tell myself, there has to be. I look through the papers that are piled on the desk. Magazines, catalogues, advertising, computer software. A school timetable with some sessions highlighted in yellow. There is a sealed envelope, which on an impulse I take. But there are no photographs of Adam. I go downstairs and make myself a drink. Boiling water, a tea bag. Don't let it stew too long, and don't compress the bag with the back of the spoon, or you'll squeeze out too much tannic acid, and the tea will be bitter. Why do I remember this, yet I don't remember giving birth? A phone rings, somewhere in the living room. I retrieve it, not the one that flips open, but the one that my husband gave to me, from my bag, and answer it. Ben. Christine. Are you okay? Are you at home? Yes, I say. Yes. Thank you. Have you been out today? He says. His voice sounds familiar, yet somehow cold. I think back to the last time we spoke. I don't remember him mentioning that I had an appointment with Dr. Nash. Perhaps he really doesn't know, I think. Or perhaps he is testing me, wondering whether I will tell him. I think of the note written next to the appointment. Don't tell Ben. I must have written that before I knew I could trust him. I want to trust him now. No more lies. Yes, I say. I've been to see a doctor. He doesn't speak. Ben, I say. Sorry. Yes, he says. I heard. I register his lack of surprise. So he had known then, known that I was seeing Dr. Nash. I'm in traffic, he says. It's a bit tricky. Listen, I just wanted to make sure you've remembered to pack. We're going away. Of course, I say, and then I add, I'm looking forward to it. And I realize I am. It will do us good, I think, to get away. It can be another beginning for us. I'll be home soon, he says. Can you try to have our bags packed? I'll help when I get in, but it'd be better if we can set off early. I'll try, I say. There are two bags in the spare room, in the wardrobe. Use those. Okay. I love you, he says. And then, after a moment too long, a moment in which he has already ended the call, I tell him that I love him too. I go to the bathroom. I am a woman, I tell myself. An adult. I have a husband. One I love. I think back to what I have read. Of the sex. Of him fucking me. I had not written that I enjoyed it. Can I enjoy sex? I realize I don't even know that. I flush the toilet and step out of my trousers, my tights, my knickers. I sit on the edge of the bed. How alien my body is. How unknown to me. How can I be happy giving it to someone else when I don't recognize it myself? I lock the bathroom door, then part my legs. Slightly at first, then more. I lift my blouse and look down. I see the stretch marks I saw the day I remembered Adam. The wiry shock of my pubic hair. I wonder if I ever shave it. Whether I choose not to based on my preference or my husband's. Perhaps those things don't matter anymore. Not now. I cut my hand and place it over my pubic mound. My fingers rest on my labia, parting them slightly. I brush the tip of what must be my clitoris and press, moving my fingers gently as I do, already feeling a faint tingle. The promise of sensation, rather than sensation itself. I wonder what will happen later. The bags are in the spare room, where he said they would be. Both are compact, sturdy, one a little larger than the other. I take them through, into the bedroom in which I woke this morning, and put them on the bed. I open the top drawer and see my underwear, next to his. I select clothes for us both, socks for him, tights for me. I remember reading of the night we had sex, and realized I must have stockings and suspenders somewhere. I decide it would be nice to find them now, to take them with me. It might be good for both of us. I move to the wardrobe. I choose a dress, a skirt, some trousers, a pair of jeans. I notice the shoebox on the floor, the one that must have hidden my journal, now empty. I wonder what kind of people we are when we go on holiday, whether we spend our evenings in restaurants or sitting in cozy pubs, relaxing in the rosy heat of a real fire. I wonder whether we walk, exploring the town and its surroundings, or drive to carefully selected venues. These are the things I don't know yet. These are the things I have the rest of my life to find out. To enjoy. I select some clothes for both of us, almost randomly, and fold them, placing them in the cases. As I do, I feel a jolt, a surge of energy, and I close my eyes. I see a vision, bright, but shimmering. It is unclear at first, as if hovering, out of both reach and focus, and I try to open my mind to let it come. I see myself standing in front of a bag, a soft suitcase in worn leather. I am excited. I feel young again, like a child about to go on holiday, or a teenager preparing for a date, wondering how it will go, whether he'll ask me back to his house, whether we'll fuck. I feel that newness, that anticipation, can taste it. I roll it on my tongue, savoring it, because I know it will not last. I open my drawers in turn, selecting blouses, stockings, underwear. Thrilling, sexy, underwear that is worn only with the anticipation of its removal. I put in a pair of heels in addition to the flat shoes I am wearing, take them out, put them in again. I don't like them, but this night is about fantasy, about dressing up, about being other than what we are. Only then do I move on to the functional things. I take a quilted wash bag in bright red leather and add perfume, shower gel, toothpaste. I want to look beautiful tonight, for the man I love. For the man I have been so close to losing. I add bath salts, orange blossom. I realize I'm remembering the night I packed to go to Brighton. The memory evaporates, my eyes open. I could not have known back then that I was packing for the man who would take everything from me. I carry on packing for the man I still have. I hear a car pull up outside. The engine dies. A door opens and then shuts. A key in the lock. Ben. He is here. I feel nervous. Scared. I'm not the same person he left this morning. I have learnt my own story. I have discovered myself. What will he think when he sees me? What will he say? I must ask him if he knows about my journal, if he has read it, what he thinks. He calls out as he closes the door behind him. Christine!
Chris!
I'm home! His voice doesn't sing, though. He sounds exhausted. I call back and tell him I'm in the bedroom. The lowest step creaks as it accepts his weight, and I hear an exhalation as first one shoe is removed, and then the other. He will be putting his slippers on now, and then he will come to find me. I feel a surge of pleasure at knowing his rituals. My journal has keyed me into them, even though my memory cannot. But, as he ascends the stairs, another emotion takes over. Fear. I think of what I wrote in the front of my journal. Don't trust Ben. He opens the bedroom door.
Darling, he says.
I have not moved. I still sit on the edge of the bed. The bags open behind me. He stands by the door until I stand and open my arms. Then he comes over and kisses me. How was your day? I say. He takes off his tie.
Oh, he says, let's not talk about that. We're on holiday.
He begins to unbutton his shirt. I fight the instinct to look away, remind myself that he is my husband, that I love him. I pack the bags, I say. I hope yours is okay. I didn't know what you'd want to take. He steps out of his trousers and folds them before hanging them in the wardrobe. I'm sure it's fine. Only I wasn't exactly sure where we were going, so I didn't know what to pack. He turns, and I wonder whether I catch a flash of annoyance in his eyes. I'll check before we put the bags in the car. It's fine. Thanks for making a start. He sits on the chair at the dressing table and pulls on a pair of faded blue jeans. I notice a perfect crease ironed down their front, and the 20-something me has to resist the urge to find him ridiculous. Ben, I say, you know where I've been today? He looks at me. Yes, he says, I know. You know about Dr. Nash? He turns away from me. Yes, he says, you told me. I can see him, reflected in the mirrors arranged around the dresser. Three versions of the man I married, the man I love. Everything, he says. You told me about it all. I know everything. You don't mind? About me seeing him. He doesn't look round. I wish you'd told me, but no, I don't mind. And my journal? You know about my journal? Yes, he says. You told me. You said it helped. A thought comes. Have you read it? No, he says. You said it was private. I would never look through your private things. But you know about Adam. You know that I know about Adam. I see him flinch, as if my words have been hurled at him with violence. I am surprised. I was expecting him to be happy. Happy that he would no longer have to tell me about his death, over and over again. He looks at me. Yes, he says. There aren't any pictures, I say. He asks what I mean. There are photos of me and you, but still none of him. He stands and comes over to where I am sitting, then sits on the bed beside me. He takes my hand. I wish he would stop treating me as if I am fragile, brittle, as if the truth would break me. I wanted to surprise you, he says. He reaches under the bed and retrieves a photo album. I've put them in here. He hands me the album. It is heavy, dark, bound in something meant to resemble black leather, but it doesn't. I open the cover, and inside it is a pile of photographs,
I wanted to put them in properly, he says. To give to you as a present tonight. But I didn't have time. I'm sorry. I look through the photographs. They are not in any order. There are photographs of Adam as a baby, a young boy. They must be the ones from the metal box. One stands out. In it he's a young man, sitting next to a woman. His girlfriend, I say. One of them, says Ben. The one he was with the longest. She's pretty, blonde, her hair cut short. She reminds me of Claire. In the photograph, Adam is looking directly at the camera, laughing, and she's looking half at him, her face a mixture of joy and disapproval. They have a conspiratorial air, as though they have shared a joke with whoever is behind the lens. They are happy. The thought pleases me. What was her name?
Helen.
She's called Helen. I wince as I realize I had thought of her in the past tense, imagined that she had died too. A thought stirs. What if she had died instead? But I force it down before it forms and finds a shape. Were they still together when he died?
Yes, he says. They were thinking of getting engaged.
She looked so young, so hungry, her eyes full of possibility, of what is in store for her. She doesn't yet know the impossible amount of pain she still has to face. I'd like to meet her, I say. Ben takes the picture from me. He sighs. We're not in touch, he says. Why? I say. I had it planned in my head. We would be a support to each other. We would share something, an understanding, a love that pierced all others, if not for each other, then at least for the thing we had lost. There were arguments, he says. Difficulties. I look at him. I can see that he doesn't want to tell me. The man who wrote the letter, the man who believed in me and cared for me, and who, in the end, loved me enough both to leave me and then to come back for me, seems to have vanished.
Ben?
There were arguments, he says.
Before Adam died, or after?
Both. The illusion of support vanishes, replaced by a sick feeling. What if Adam and I had fought too? Surely he would have sided with his girlfriend over his mother.
Were Adam and I close? I say.
Oh, yes, says Ben. Until you had to go to the hospital. Until you lost your memory. Even then you were close, of course. As close as you could be.
His words hit me like a punch. I realized that Adam was a toddler when he lost his mother to amnesia. Of course I had never known my son's fiancée. Every day I saw him would have been like the first.
I close the book.
Can we bring it with us? I say. I'd like to look at it some more later.
We have a drink. Cups of tea that Ben made in the kitchen as I finished packing for the journey. And then we get into the car. I check I have my handbag, my journal still within it. Ben has added a few things to the bag I packed for him, and he's brought another bag too. The leather satchel that he left with this morning, as well as two pairs of walking boots from the back of the wardrobe. I had stood by the door as he loaded these things into the boot, and then waited while he checked the doors were closed, the windows locked. Now I ask him how long the journey may take. He shrugs his shoulders.
Depends on the traffic, he says. Not too long, once we're out of London.
A refusal to provide an answer, disguised as an answer itself. I wonder if this is what he is always like. I wonder if years of telling me the same thing have worn him down, bored him to the point where he can no longer bring himself to tell me anything. He is a careful driver, that much I can see. He proceeds slowly, checking his mirror frequently, slowing down at the merest hint of an approaching hazard. I wonder if Adam drove. I suppose he must have done so to be in the army. But did he ever drive when he was on leave? Did he pick me up, his invalid mother, and take me on trips, to places he thought I might like? Or did he decide there was no point?
that whatever enjoyment I might have had at the time would disappear overnight like snow melting on a warm roof. We are on the motorway, heading out of the city. It has begun to rain. Huge droplets smack into the windscreen, hold their shape for a moment, before beginning the swift slide down the glass. In the distance, the lights of the city bathe the concrete and glass in a soft orange glow. It is beautiful and terrible, but I am struggling inside. I want so much to think of my son as something other than abstract. But without a concrete memory of him, I cannot. I keep coming back to the single truth. I cannot remember him. And so he might as well never have existed. I close my eyes. I think back to what I read about our son this afternoon, and an image explodes in front of me. Adam as a toddler, pushing the blue tricycle along a path. But even as I marvel at it, I know it is not real. I know I am not remembering the thing that happened. I am remembering the image I formed in my mind this afternoon as I read about the thing. And even that was a recollection of an earlier memory. Memories of memories. Most people's going back through years, through decades, but for me, just a few hours. Failing to remember my son, I do the next best thing, the only thing to quiet my sparking mind. I think of nothing. Nothing at all. The smell of petrol, thick and sweet. There is a pain in my neck. I open my eyes. Up close I see the wet windscreen misted with my breath, and beyond it there are distant lights, blurred, out of focus. I realize that I have been dozing. I am leaning against the glass, my head twisted awkwardly. The car is silent, the engine off. I look over my shoulder. Ben is there, sitting next to me. He is awake, looking ahead, out of the window. He doesn't move. Doesn't even seem to have noticed that I've woken up, but instead continues to stare, his expression blank, unreadable in the dark. I turn to see what he is looking at. Beyond the rain-spattered windscreen is the bonnet of the car, and beyond that a low wooden fence, dimly illuminated in the glow from the street lamps behind us. Beyond the fence I see nothing, a blackness, huge and mysterious. In the middle of which hangs the moon, full and low. I love the sea, he says, without looking at me. And I realized we are parked on a cliff top, have made it as far as the coast. Don't you? He turns to me. His eyes seem impossibly sad. You do love the sea, don't you, Chris? He says. I do, I say. Yes. He is speaking as if he doesn't know, as if we have never been to the coast before, as if we had never been on holiday together. Fear begins to burn within me, but I resist. I try to stay here, in the present, with my husband. I try to remember all that I learnt from my journal this afternoon. You know that, darling. He sighs. I know. You always used to. But I just don't know anymore. You change. You've changed over the years, ever since what happened. Sometimes I don't know who you are. I wake up each day and I don't know how you're going to be. I am silent. I can think of nothing to say. We both know how senseless it would be for me to try to defend myself, to tell him that he is wrong. We both know that I am the last person who knows how much I change from day to day. I'm sorry, I say at last. He looks at me. Oh, it's all right. You don't need to apologize. I know it's not your fault. None of this is your fault. I'm being unfair, I suppose. Thinking of myself. He looks back out to sea. There is a single light in the distance. A boat on the waves, light in a sea of treacly blackness. Ben speaks. We'll be all right, won't we, Chris? Of course, I say. Of course we will. This is a new beginning for us. I have my journal now, and Dr. Nash will help me. I'm getting better, Ben. I know I am. I think I'm going to start writing again. There's no reason not to. I should be fine. And anyway, I'm in touch with Claire now, and she can help me. An idea comes to me. We can all get together, don't you think? Just like old times. Just like at university, the three of us. And her husband, I suppose. I think she said she had a husband. We can all meet up and spend time together. It'll be fine. My mind fixes on the lies I have read, on all the ways I have not been able to trust him. But I force it away. I remind myself that all that has been resolved. It is my turn to be strong now, to be positive. As long as we promise to always be honest with each other, I say, then everything is going to be okay. He turns back to face me. You do love me, don't you? Of course I do. And you forgive me for leaving you. I didn't want to. I had no choice. I'm sorry. I take his hand. It feels both warm and cold at the same time, slightly damp. I try to hold it between my hands, but he neither assists nor resists my action. Instead, his hand rests lifeless on his knee. I squeeze it, and only then does he seem to notice that I am holding it. Ben, I understand. I forgive you. I look into his eyes. They too seem dull and lifeless, as if they have seen so much horror already that they cannot cope with any more. I love you, Ben, I say. His voice drops to a whisper. Kiss me. I do as he asks, and then, when I have drawn back, he whispers, again. Kiss me again. I kiss him a second time. But even though he asks me,